Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
Welcome back, y'all. It's another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. And as always, we are presented to you in partnership with brands that we feel represent the very best of the outdoor industry. So before we get started, we'd like to give a special shout out to Moultrie Products, Uhler's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pip Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Alps Outdoors, and last but certainly not least, a special shout out to the good folks over at Briley's for leaving a legacy of shooting innovation. Whether you need new cameras to elevate the scouting experience, new arrows or anything for your archery setups, clothing, scent, or whatever it may be. As a supporter of the podcast, you can use promo code WDTTPROMO. That's WDTTPROMO for 15% off anything on the website at Uhler'sArchery.com. Some exclusions may apply. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your host, Mr. Courtney Williams.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I've got a super special guest on today. I think it's the second person from New Jersey that I've had on the podcast. Super pumped about this one to show a female's perspective with firearms and in the hunting aspect. Miss Ebony Brown, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Fantastic. First of all, I want to say thank you for agreeing to get on the podcast with me, and I just want to pick your brain a little bit about how you got started in the outdoors, how you got started with the firearms and everything. So first off, introduce yourself, tell everybody where you're from, and just a little bit about yourself.
So thank you so much for having me first, Courtney. I appreciate it. My name is Ebony, and I'm from South Jersey, and I'm a nurse, and I'm an outdoor enthusiast, a lover, and I enjoy the outdoor experience, fishing, hunting, camping, hiking, pretty much all outdoors, and I've pretty much done it all at least once.
Awesome. Yeah, I know we spoke off air about your background with your firearms. Like, you want to share a little bit about your background with firearms and guns or whatever?
Sure. I started out, and I actually was anti-gun when I was in high school, and a friend of mine many years later, a good friend, she said, "I want to show you something," and she showed me her pistol permit. In New York State, all pistol permits have all of your firearms listed. And I looked at the permit, and on the back of it lists several firearms. Then she gave me a second card with more firearms. And I was just shocked that somebody that was so awesome and so friendly and kind would even have any firearms. So I was intrigued by that because I thought firearms were only for bad people. And so then it kind of started my inquiry into shooting. So I went out and I took a million safety classes. I took classes on classes. And then I, picked everyone's brains to find out like what would be my first firearm. I purchased it. I got lessons on lessons. And then I started my, acquiring the firearms that I wanted. And going to different ranges, I joined a couple clubs, and then I just continued to acquire knowledge. I became eventually an instructor, and I've done all disciplines of firearms, which is pistol, rifle, shotgun, and all different variations of that. So, steel plate and open sights with shotgun, NSCA. I became also a referee, a certified referee for certain disciplines. And I just been working on my, on shooting sports since then. I became an instructor as well. I also work with the Boy Scouts. So I ran ranges with the Boy Scouts, and I was a coach for high school trap team. And so that's pretty much my background with firearms. I'm an archery instructor as well, but I need to get back into archery.
Okay, that's quite an extensive background, really. So coming from, I like the story because coming from a person that was anti-gun and then got into guns, I think that's where I get a lot of flack from African Americans. Simply because they're like, you're doing all this white boy stuff. That's what white boys do, this and this and this. But come to find out, the more that I talk to some of these people, they've had some type of trauma with a gun. Like their son may have got killed, or their dad may have got shot, or somebody in their family has had some ties to getting wounded with a gun. So they're kind of like standoffish about guns. But like I tell people, like you said, you thought guns were for bad people. I grew up with them. I learned safety protocols from my dad at a young age. So I knew not to touch a gun. And when he actually gave me my gun, like I knew, treat a firearm like it's loaded. We're walking back to the truck, make sure your gun's unloaded, like all these safety protocols that we try to teach, especially new hunters and new shooters. But I love the fact that you, especially growing up in New Jersey, I don't know what part of New Jersey you come from, but New Jersey's not known for, as far as I'm concerned, hunting or you know, some, you know, places like that, like the South would be. So it's awesome to see. So
interestingly enough, North Jersey is not, but South Jersey actually is. I'm from South Jersey, but I still, I didn't start any of this hunting stuff or firearms until I was in New York already. But South Jersey actually has a big hunting community and a big firearm community as well.
That's awesome. See, I didn't know any of that. You know, from the South, we think, I guess, everybody's got guns. We think everybody up north is just a bunch of Yankees and don't know nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, that's an awesome story. So I'm glad, glad you got a background in that. Glad you're out there teaching people to be safe and to defend themselves, you know, because this world is getting crazy. And I'm before too long, I feel like everybody's going to have to pick up a gun and know how to use it. So 100%. Thank you for that. So let's get into, so what made you decide to get into hunting?
So being a member of a club, an outdoors club, I was introduced to the part of our club has a pheasant preserve where you can go and hunt on property and you can go hunt at the preserve. And every, I believe, October in New York, there's a, well, for our club at least, there's a free day where they allow any member to go to the hunt preserve for free. So I went out with a couple of my buddies. We went to the preserve for the pheasants and it was a great time. And I figured, being that I've always been outdoors, I wanted to have my children, I wanted to create a tradition. Being that I fell in love with it, I wanted to have it so that it would be a part of their life. Just like you said, you know, about your father teaching you, I wanted to teach my children and I wanted to make it a tradition. I wanted to be, annually we go out every year, something you could remember. Mommy takes me out and we go hunting, deer hunting or whatever hunting it was. And unfortunately, they were not very receptive to that, but that's how it got started. The idea and the concept was, if I learn how to do this, then I can teach my children how to do it. And then I can have an annual tradition that we do every year. That's how it kind of got started.
I like that. So it's something that you wanted to, kind of give back to your children.
Yeah, because I didn't have it. I didn't have it growing up. I didn't have a father or a grandpa who said, hey, let's go shoot the shot. I didn't have any of that. And I didn't know anything. So I wanted it to be like when you hear a lot of people who are into the community, they talk about how they got started. And it's usually as children. And they usually every year would go to my dad hunting and I would sit in the cold, in the blind or wherever they were. And I kind of wanted to recreate that for me and my family. Like I said, it, you know, didn't happen, but
yeah, I like that though. The things we do for our kids, that's for sure. How many kids do you have?
I have one child.
I've got one as well, and he's 7 years old, and he is literally wanting to do everything.
Oh, my God, you have a baby.
Yeah, he's a baby, and he loves going outside shooting his bow. He wants to do everything that I do, and it's awesome to see that he has that passion. You know, he's into sports as well, but anytime I'm going out to check trail cameras or going out to do something in the woods, he's right there beside me, so.
I love that. I mean, it's really important, I think, especially for, you know, our community to make sure that we instill the proper and right way to go about and have a sense of firearms, outdoors, and hunting, because these are critical skills. I think, you know, our children need to know how to do it.
Right. So coming from a firearms background, was it easier for you to transition into hunting, or were there some challenges that you faced?
Not a challenge at all. I mean, I think the only challenge as a woman for me was, and why I haven't gone out as, like, this was the first year I've gone out. I've been in this community for years, since 2010. The reason why as a woman is challenging is because I did not want to go out alone, and I didn't want to be in the woods alone. So I needed to make sure I could find people I could trust, you know, to take me out and not have to worry about being in the woods alone in a an area that's, you know, without a lot of people or witnesses. So there was a lot to it. And ultimately, you know, it took time, but I'm here because I had the opportunity. And then in New York State, finding the proper places to go, it is readily available information, but it just helps if you have somebody who's experienced. So my rule was, I'm not going to do it if I don't have people to go with who are experienced and who I trust to take me out and not have to be concerned about not coming back.
Awesome. Yeah. You said something right there that I want to kind of highlight. So I had a woman named Sharenda Burks on my podcast. She's an African-American woman as well. And I'm going to hook you two up because I think y'all would be perfect. She is a part of a women's hunting group called Wilderness. I'll actually send you the link so you can kind of see what they do. But she basically said the same thing that you just said, like being an African-American, being a woman first and then an African-American woman, you know, she was scared to go out hunting by herself because, you know, anything could happen. So she wanted to find some people that she trusts to take her and then finding spots. And it's kind of for me here too. There's a public land spot up the road for me. It's probably 30 minutes up the road, but it's in an area that has historically been known to be a very, very, very racist part of the state. And a lot of my buddies are like, hey man, you know, let's go down there and hunt. I said, man, I'm not going down there. I said, simply because of the history, you know. They're like, oh, it's not like it anymore. I'm like, I don't know that. You don't know that. I don't want to put myself in a situation where I might not make it back home to my family. So I'm going to decline going down there. And the more that I talk to some of these African-American hunters in different states, they have places on public land that they won't go hunt simply for that reason. And getting that through some people's heads, it's kind of hard because they haven't walked the walk that we have. You know, they don't live in the skin we live in. They haven't went through a lot of the experiences we have went through as African-Americans. But when you sit down and actually have a conversation with them and tell them, you know, the background, where you come from, and this is why I'm not going there, they seem to start understanding then. And then they're like, man, that's crazy. You know, I'm like, it is, but that's the world we live in. And I feel like it's getting somewhat better because some of the older generation is dying off and some of the newer generation is kind of taking over and not going with the same standards that their grandfather had or their great grandfather had. So I think it's getting a lot better. So, but I'm gonna definitely hook you up with Sharenda. She's hilarious. She's on Instagram. She's one of the funniest people I have ever met in my life. And she's a big hunter. She can definitely get, you know, steer you in the right direction.
Do you know what state she's in?
I want to say she's in St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
I want to say she's in St. Louis. Sharenda, if you're watching this, which I know you probably are, well, when I post this, I think you're in Missouri somewhere. I'm sorry if I didn't get the state right, but I'm almost positive she's in Missouri. Like I said, she hits me up all the time. I like to pick her brain about stuff. And like, she's a part of this big, like women's, I think it's like a club, or I think it might be a nonprofit called Wilderness, like Wilderness, but with the in the middle, like it's, you'd have to look them up. I'll send you a link, but they're doing some really good things for, you know, helping women get in the outdoors and, you know, feeling more comfortable. So I'm going to definitely hook y'all two up. So
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. So, going down my list here. So have you gone on your first hunt yet? And if so, what was your experience like emotionally? And just how did you feel after your first hunt?
So I went turkey hunting this season. And the first day I went with a friend and I learned, you know, how to do turkey calls on a slate call. And I thought it was, he made it look easy. It's not easy.
It's not at all.
We had to be, I think we had to meet up at 4:30 in the morning. So that was interesting. And then we trekked through the woods into this area that he hunts in all the time. And it was a very interesting experience, but I was happy that I had somebody to go with. So that I would say that was a great experience, but that was the only time we ever hunted together. The rest of the days I went by myself.
Gotcha.
So going by myself was extremely exciting. I had a blind. I eventually bought a better blind. And just being out in the wild, my most favorite part of it was the wake up. Like hearing the birds wake up and watching the sunrise in my blind. I mean, I got to see a couple foxes. I saw one turkey hen. I saw a million squirrels, a couple deer. It was just a beautiful experience. And even though I sat there for hours freezing my hind parts off, it was just a great experience. I could not be happier. I videoed some of it. Different parts of it. I took video of myself, like, pretending that I was like, you know, people you see on TV, guys, I'm going to my blind or whatever. And on my final day, I did a video of me walking back to my car, but it was the best experience I had. I can't wait for the next hunting season. I can't wait because it was amazing. So emotionally, I was extremely excited. I was nervous. So in turkey hunting, you're supposed to, you know, roost the birds the night before. Never roosted the birds because I would not go in the woods alone in the dark. Right. So I never roosted. So I didn't expect to really be successful because I didn't follow the protocol, so to speak. But I had a great time overall, just getting past being alone in the woods, but being prepared with all my tools. And I had a great time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I tell people, man, especially spring turkey, when you hear them woods light up, when them birds are hammering and then the woods wake up and the crows start crowing and the owls, like, it's a time, I'm telling you. It's awesome. And it's the same thing in the fall, too. When you're out there sitting in your blind and it's freezing cold and, you know, you get in there early, it's still dark, and then all of a sudden, you know, daylight hits and hello, everything's awake. So it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling. I tell everybody they need to experience it once if they never experienced it before.
Absolutely. And I think for me also, I'm a Boy Scout. So I'm a Scoutmaster, Assistant Scoutmaster. So I didn't have any unprepared moments. I was completely prepared. I even had, I have reusable heat packs. Like I was not uncomfortable because I was prepared. I've been hiking, hunting, you know, camping. And I mean, we've done camping with the scouts every year. They do a freezery in crazy cold weather. So I was definitely layered, prepared. I researched everything. So I really didn't have any first time issues because I was prepared. I had everything and more. That probably contributed to it being such a positive experience because it wasn't completely, you know, something that I wasn't able to do. Like it wasn't completely foreign to me. The only difference was is that instead of being on a field, being on a field and shooting at clays or being out somewhere else, now I'm looking for a specific live animal target. That was the only difference.
That's cool. I like that. So is there anything, I ask all new hunters this, is there anything that you wish you would have known before you got into the woods? That you know it now, but you wish you would have known it before you stepped in the woods?
Not as far as being in the woods, because I'm extremely familiar with that. I would love to have spent a little more time trying to perfect my calls. Like, I didn't quite understand like my cadence. I mean, I looked at some videos, but my cadence was, I know it was off, like, and the method to it and when to do which calls, you know, trying to learn that stuff. I wish I would have had a little more knowledge on the actual target. So understanding the way turkeys actually work, how they walk and how they come down, and how can you get a tom to fly in? Like, what do you need to do? What calls should you make and when? Like, you know, I found out afterwards, you know, by really researching this towards the end of the season, that early when the sun breaks should be really soft calls. They should be calls as if they were still in the tree or maybe just coming down. I even seen one video of a guy. He had turkey feathers and he would, you know, make noises as if he was flying down, and he would mess with the ground so that he could pretend to be like a hen, because I saw a hen actually shuffle the leaves. So those are things that I will have for next season that I wish I would have known. And I think it's critical that if you're going to go out and, you know, whatever your target is, to have more knowledge on their behaviors, their natural behaviors, because you need to emulate that so they can come into you. Otherwise, you'll just be they're kind of be like, I think that's not real. And I kind of have a feeling that's what happened. They're like, that's not a hen calling me, you know. Probably they were, I said a woodpecker was laughing at me.
That's funny. Yeah, there's Will Primos. He's big in the hunting industry. Primos Hunting. He's got videos all over the internet, and his logo is like speak the language. And then when you're watching some of his videos, he tells you whatever species that you're targeting, you want to paint a picture to whatever that you're targeting. So if you're targeting turkeys, you want to paint a picture of that hen, you know, coming to that gobbler, or that gobbler coming to that hen. It's crazy because when you're in the turkey woods, and I've been turkey hunting for a long time, and I love it, but it can be very frustrating at times. You can have your slate call, and you're sitting there calling, they're not responding. You know, then you put the mouth call in, they're not responding. Then you put another mouth call in, they're not responding. So you get another call out of your bag, boom, they strike off. Like, you just never know what they're gonna come into. And once you do find out, you know, which calls is working, if you know, get that time coming in and you just make that wrong strike, he's gonna pop his head up and like, hold on, that don't sound right, you know. But it takes a little bit to master it. There's 1,000 videos on YouTube that you can watch. I personally like to watch Stanley Williams. He's a black guy. He makes Black Lightning custom calls, and
Oh,
he's
really?
always he's he's a
Wow.
compet he's a competitor too. So he gets in those turkey calling competitions. I'll send you a link to his stuff too. He's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then Michael Waddell, he's a OG in the game, with Bone Collector. And there's a young kid out here now, with Higdon Outdoors. His name's Bo Brooks. He's a good one to watch too. But I can send you all those links too. But it's whatever works for you, and it takes a little bit to learn it. But once you learn what calls to use when, it makes it a lot easier. And I, like I said, I'm no master at it. I still sound horrible. I feel like I can call a bird off the moon, but I really can't. I feel like I'm confident in it, but at the same time, I'm just like, do I really sound like a turkey? You know,
Have you taken any? Have you gotten any turkeys?
this year I didn't get to hunt. But I've got, let's see, I've got six here on the wall, fans, and then I've got a couple at my mom's house. But you know, a lot of people have way more than that. But I am perfectly fine with the ones I have harvested. I've missed my fair share of turkeys, just like everybody else. But you know, I started turkey hunting late. I didn't really get into it until probably after college. Cause I really didn't know much about it, for one, and two, it just didn't really seem like something I wanted to target. So I was coaching baseball, at a high school in the town that I went to college, and, me and my buddy Shane, and there was a kid that he was a senior on the baseball team. And he's like, "Hey man, and we're going turkey hunting Saturday with me and my dad and, you know, a couple of the guys, like, y'all want to tag along?" I said, "Man, I've never been." I said, "I'd love to go." And this kid, man, he could do all the calls with his mouth. Like, he didn't need any of the calls. And his little brother, he's like, "I'm gonna give my little brother the first shot, you know, but there's like five birds on this property." So he's like, "We're gonna see a lot of birds today." I mean, he called this bird. It was probably 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock. And he had this bird coming in full sprint across this cornfield. And his little brother ended up taking that. And then we seen probably three more birds after that that we just couldn't get. We just couldn't get them to come to us. But it was an awesome experience. And then after that, I was like, "Okay, I'm going to try this at home where I live." Went home and, you know, I bought these little calls from Walmart thinking I'm going to go out there and call. And I had a Tom come out at probably 70 yards. I'm sitting there trying to call to him, and he just kind of looked and took off running. He knew whoever was calling over there was not a hen. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." So to YouTube I went. So yeah.
One call more effective for you?
I like to use a mouth call simply because I have been in situations where I have a slate call in my hand. And all of a sudden there's the bird. And I'm like, "Oh no, I can't move."
You're not even mounted.
Yeah. So I'm just like, if I move, that bird's gone. So I'm sitting there just clucking away, yelping away. And then all of a sudden I try to put that call down and pick up my shotgun. Bird's gone.
Yeah.
So I tell everybody, I mean, everybody has their own way of doing it, but I like to have the mouth call so I can keep my shotgun up. That's just makes me. Sense. But yeah, but so moving on here. So as a woman entering the hunting space, have you felt welcome by most of everybody that you have came in contact with so far?
Absolutely. 100%. I've had no problems. So again, I don't go out with people who I don't feel comfortable and don't know. So the people who I've gone out with, of course, I feel comfortable with them. In the community as a whole, it's been very welcoming. It's male dominated. So I see a lot of men. But as somebody like myself, who born and raised tomboy, I mean, that kind of stuff, I fit right in. And they don't, we bust chops, we get to it. You know, I smoke cigars, I drink bourbon. So I don't have any, you know, I fit right in. I'm one of the guys.
That's good.
So I've not had any problems.
Yeah, I hope it stays that way. Because, I mean, the hunting community as a whole, we're very welcoming to everybody. I mean, you got stupid people everywhere in every walk of life, but most of the hunting community, they're going to try to help you out as much as you can, try to give you as much knowledge as you can. I just tell everybody not to overthink it as a new hunter, because me and Trey was talking about this the other night on the podcast. You can get on my podcast, I can tell you one thing about, let's say, deer hunting. You can get on another podcast, they're telling you something different. You can get on another podcast and they're telling you something else. So when you're trying to make a game plan, you've got all these people that you've been listening to, and you're like, well, so-and-so said I need to do this, and so-and-so said I need to do this. So you're kind of like, I don't know what to do. I tell everybody, just get out in the woods. You're going to figure out what works for you, but it's all about time in the stand, boots on the ground, getting in there, finding out what works for you, what doesn't work for you, because you'll figure it out. And just because something works for me is not guaranteed it's going to work for somebody else, you know? So you kind of got to find your own way of doing things, you know? So, but I tell everybody, it's a very great community.
Yeah, I think that's really important because, again, as a female and entering in the firearms realm altogether, and it's a thing. It really is. It's a joke people make about, you know, mansplaining things, but it's true. I mean, I've gone to people who have less credentials than I have, and they need to teach me something about what I'm doing. So the same thing applies in firearms for women as it does in hunting for women. Everybody's got a tick, you know, something to tell you. They have something that you got to do it this way. Everybody's going to say that. And as a person who's experienced, you know, let's just take the firearms community, I already know, even if you're less qualified than me or even have less experience or knowledge than me, you know what? Maybe I'll try that. You know, you have to do that, you know, just so they can get out their little piece of knowledge and take what you can from what they're saying if you want to incorporate it into your own knowledge and then just drop everything else. So a lot of times it's interesting. Men in particular love to teach women how to do things right.
Right.
So you have to learn, you'll get hit with it over and over again. And the same with hunting. So everybody had a lot of things they wanted to tell me, a lot of different things to do. And I had to take my knowledge plus my research plus what they said, put it all together, make a little pie with it and pick what I wanted to do, what I felt most comfortable with.
Right. Yeah. I think that's with any space, man. We try as males, we try to tell females like, well, this is the way you need to do it. And it's not always the case. Like I know some females right now that I could call that outshoot most men with a bow, with a rifle, with a shotgun. They forgot more about firearms than I'll ever know. And just because they've done the research, they had a father figure that was into it, or they're just really into what they're, you know, they've mastered their craft. And I try to tell everybody, you need to be, especially in the outdoor industry, you want to be an open book. You want to absorb as much knowledge as you can from everybody, because everybody's going to tell you something different, from the OGs to the young bucks. But you don't want to get out there and make a name for yourself where you think you know everything. Like, you can always learn something new in the outdoors. Like,
always.
I learned from an OG years ago, because I would have my turkey calls, my mouth calls, I'd just keep them in my backpack. And OG told me, I was at the NWTF about probably 5 years ago.
Nice.
And he came up to me, he's an older black gentleman. And how you doing, man? I said, I'm doing good, sir. How about you? He said, I'm doing good, man. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Kentucky. I think he was from South Georgia somewhere. And he said, I'll give you a little tip about your turkey calls. We got to talk about turkey. And he said, where do you store your turkey calls? I said, I store my turkey calls in my bag. He said, don't do that. He said, put them in a plastic bag and put them in the freezer. I said, so what's the freezer do? He said, man, it keeps the reeds and everything hard so they don't bend and kind of lose their sound. He said, all you got to do is take them out, thaw them out, whatever you got to do, put them back in your mouth. He said, they'll be like they're brand new. And I've been doing it ever since. And my mouth calls sound the same as they did when I bought them off the shelf. And I tell people that. And I've ran into maybe two or three people that have heard that before. And all of them have been from Georgia. So it might be, it might just be a Georgia thing that I heard that from. But it was, it was pretty cool just to absorb that knowledge from him and, you know, get to talk to him about his experiences growing up hunting. And it's always fun just to pick people's brains. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I've learned throughout, you know, going through these experiences and starting out older and as a woman many years ago when I first started in the community is that listening to the older gentlemen, the best thing you could do. I mean, because they come with life experience. They have little tricks that you can't read in the book. You know, you can get certified and do a million different things. You can be have all these credentials, but listening to life experience is more, you know, it's more helpful because just like you said, little tidbits, like you'll read in the book, you know, make sure you have them in your bag so you always have them. Or, you know, somebody told me once, put them in a bag with like a tissue or something to make sure they don't make a sound. I have a box call. And right. Just listening to people's experience, you learn more. So definitely, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, if you go back in time anyway, you know, the older people, you know, they didn't have a lot of money, most of them. And they learned so much stuff. And they'd go by the Farmer's Almanac mostly here in the South.
Yeah.
And the knowledge that they had about, you know, just anything really, you know, and the remedies that they had, you know, when they got sick, you know, mix this and this and this together. And, you know, if you're planting something, don't plant till after, you know, Derby Day, and don't do this and don't do that. I'm like, man, you know, as my grandma said, you know, she always said, you don't get to be old being no fool. So
she's a wise woman.
Yeah, she was for sure. And she was probably the smartest woman I'd ever met. I just used to sit and listen to her talk. And I'm like, how is this woman this smart? You know, and, you know, growing up, I guess then, you know, she grew up there during the Great Depression and everything. So, you know, they ate pretty much what they could. You know, there wasn't a lot of jobs available. You hunted and land. And fish the land, planted your crops. If crops didn't come in, you're going hungry. So you better get it right. Pray for rain. So
absolutely.
So and do you think there's enough representation of women in the outdoor industry? I know I've asked this question a few times to a few ladies, and I get kind of different, somewhat different answers, but the same answer, if it makes sense, just a different way of saying it. So what's your take on that?
Absolutely not. And I contemplate and I wonder why. I think part of it is society. I think part of it is access. Part of it is vulnerability. Like I said, you know, I've had my hunting license since well over 12, 15 years. And this is the first year I've gone out hunting. And that's because, you know, understanding that being alone in the woods makes you a target just because of the fact that I'm a woman. And, you know, I think that that's part of what, you know, if you don't have a partner who hunts, then it's challenging to get in. Like, how do you meet people? How do you meet men who do or women who do? And, you know, there's now women groups, but I don't recall there being women groups that I knew about. They're not, it's kind of like WNBA in the sense, whereas there's this big thing, but it's not highly advertised, highly, you know, viewed. You know, that's why you had Venus and Serena doing what they did to advocate for women's sports. I feel like this is another extension of that in the sense that it's an area where we are in it, but we're not represented because it's not a lot of us. And when you think about advertising and things, when you do see us in it, you see us in bikinis with an AR.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing the true passion that we actually do have. We're not just a prop. We're not just I don't know if I can cuss, but we're not just in a pair of jeans, you know, doing something. I mean, you have people who have, you know, profited off of that image, but that's not what real outdoor women do. It's kind of why I like Rain. I can't recall her last name now, but because she's just in her jumper, like, we're going to go hunting or we're going to go this. And that's the true passion of women in the outdoor industry. And I just feel like there's not enough of us because sex sells. So what you're promoting when you do see it is sexual. So then you have people who are seeing all these advertisements. They're seeing, they're in the industry. They're looking at magazines, ads, and all these things, and sexual. So now you're going out into the woods, and what do you see? A beautiful Black woman. Mm-hmm. You never know what that could, you know, propagate. So it's, I think that's the reason why. And also there's not, we're working. I think it's something that is growing. I think it will become more, but I don't think it'll ever be like, you know, when we had the Women's Football League, it just never became the NFL. So I think we'll get in greater, and I think there'll be more opportunities. And the more that we connect and people like you who showcase and highlight and bring a voice to our you know, community is helpful, because now somebody might look at this and say, hey, look, there's somebody. She's in New York. I'm in New York. And you never know how it works, but it's going to happen by word of mouth and having a mutual respect. And that's what's so great about your podcast and by having, you know, other women on. Like you told me somebody, I've never heard of her before. So I'm excited. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to follow her. And then that's going to start a chain. Somebody might see this and say, oh, I'm going to reach out and follow her. And that's how it's going to become a networking thing where we gain in our, you know, in our community.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, social media can be used for good, and it also can be used for evil. And I feel like most women that you see, well, I wouldn't say most, I would say some, are only about those likes. You know, companies are paying these women to literally get out on a boat in a bikini with a fishing rod, and they've never done it before in their lives. Or they'll pay them to be holding a gun with their logo on it or something like that. But when you run into a real, yeah, like when you run into a real, you know, a real woman that's in the outdoors, you know, start picking her brain, like she knows what she's talking about. It's not just a fad. It's not just something. She's not looking for likes. You can actually have a conversation about, you know, hunting or whatever, and she knows what she's talking about. And I feel like she has to know more or just as much as most guys, simply because they're not going to take her serious, I feel like. So you have to do your due diligence and research stuff, because when you do meet a female, some of these guys like, oh, you're just doing this for likes. But when that female starts spouting off facts about, you know, this gun, that bow, it's like, hold on. Like, she knows what she's talking about. Yeah. And so when I see to that a lot.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I bet you've seen it a lot. I guarantee you've seen it a lot 100%. As, you know, firearms instructor.
So that's what happens, you know. When I first started shooting, I would go in my little thing. I'm not going to say I'm really short, but I'm less than 5'1". And I would go in there in my little book bag and like, yeah, I'm going to get my little lane and stuff. Okay. And I would go in there and do that. And, you know, you start to notice somebody's watching. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to come over. Oh, hey, you know, do. And I'm like, I know what I'm doing. It's okay. So, but once they see you shoot, all of a sudden you get that respect. Once you talk to somebody and they see your mannerism and how you behave, then you gain respect. And that's when the knowledge starts. Well, hey, you know, if you did this, then this would make this better. And that's how you learn and grow. So 100%, I think you, as a woman, you kind of need that, because for some reason you're not taken as seriously as it, you know, you would be, especially if you're new or starting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy to think that, but, you know, we have, you know, the society has their standards, and you just, it's kind of like the whole, you know, people of color in the outdoors. Like, you don't see you don't see many women either. So it's just like when you do find one, you know, everybody wants to try to like test her, you know, let's ask her this question and see if she knows this, you know, and if she does, she's like, oh, we're going to take her serious. But if she doesn't, it's like, oh, she's just doing that. It's just maybe she's never heard about that, or maybe she's never been exposed to that. It's not saying that she's less of a hunter or less of an outdoorsman than you. It's just like she might have not been exposed to that. Like, you can't look down on her for that, you know. And I just feel like that's what hunters get a bad rap for that. Because, like, say for instance, like you take a deer this year and it's not up to society standards of the size it should be, you're going to get 1,000 comments. It's like, I remember my first deer, or I remember when I shot Bambi, you know, that deer still got spots on it. Well, that deer still got this. I never would have shot that deer. Instead of uplifting the person, hey, congrats, you know, great, great deer, great this, you know, congratulations. We want to down everybody.
A lot of criticism.
Yeah, there's a lot of criticism in this. And then I tell people, you know, if you're going to be on social media posting, you know, pictures of you, you know, hunting stuff, like, you better be ready for the negative comments, because they're coming. You're going to get a lot of comments. Don't, you know, good comments. Don't get me wrong. But them negative people, they're just waiting behind a keyboard to pounce on you. So yeah. just be ready. But yeah, what do you think has been more mentally challenging for you? Going to the range or going out in the woods?
Definitely the woods. I mean, if I had to choose, even though I'm very comfortable in the woods, going out alone in the woods, it's just something about it that's that causes hesitation. Going to the range, any day, all day. You know, I'm aware of my environments. I know where my exits are. I know my strategy. I'm very situationally aware. I'm comfortable with where I go in the range. I go, I do what I need to do, make sure I'm clear, and I get out. In the woods, you have more variables. So there's more opportunity. There's a heightenedness to your situational awareness. So I make sure that I put in my hearing protection before I even go in, because I want to hear if there's a crack in a stick 2 miles away. I want to know it's coming. Is there an animal? Is it a man? Is it somebody? Who's there? What are you doing? Where am I? The light changes, because in a range, I mean, even if you're in an outdoor range, I mean, I shoot both in and outdoor, there's still a line. You're in the area where you're shooting, and then you have the space till you get to your targets. But in the woods, it's all open. Every angle, everything is an opportunity for something positive or something not positive. So it's definitely mentally more challenging in the woods, especially if you are by yourself. It is less when you're with people who you're comfortable and confident with, who you know will have your back. So if something was to present itself, a threat or a situation, if I fell down and broke my ankle, I have somebody there. I'm not worried. If I'm in a range, EMS is right there. But if I'm out in the middle of the woods, I have nothing. I have no one. Can I get to my phone? Do I have my whistle with me? Where's my gear? One of the challenges I faced this last time was I had to leave my blind up, because I couldn't carry, you know, as I said, I'm not 5'1". Try carrying a 2-man blind plus your shotgun, plus your chair, plus your, you know, your tripod, plus all, you know, your heating, your backpack, your ammo. Try carrying all that up a mountain. It gets pretty challenging and tiring real quick, you know? Right. So there's a lot more variables and challenges that make it more mentally stressful, and when you're dealing with the outdoors, because so many variables, it's almost like sensory overload, because you constantly have to be prepared, and anything is enough cause for you to stop to see what it is. so you can handle it, whatever it is, and make sure you're prepared to handle it. So, you know, you ever hear the meme where people are going somewhere and they're going there for 2 days, but they pack like a 5 days or 2 weeks worth of clothes. It's the same principle, because there's so many different variables. You got to make sure you have a tool for everything that could possibly come your way, and be ready to handle it, whatever it is. So definitely is more challenging and mentally going in the woods.
Yeah. Hunting. I tell people that all the time. You know, they ask me, you know, what I have in my pack, you know, when I'm going in the woods, you know. And if I'm hunting the farm that I grew up on, I don't take a lot of gear with me, because my mom's house is literally 100 yards from where I'm at. But if I'm somewhere else, I make sure that I've got, you know, my first aid kit, I've got my water, I've got anything that I think I would need to possibly save my life, or, you know, a predator comes in, I can take care of it. You know, if I get hurt, I can take care of that, make sure I'm hydrated, make sure I got enough, you know, energy or whatever to pack that, you know, mule deer or whitetail, whatever out. It depends, but I like to be prepared, like you said, because I'd rather have it in my pack and not need it. You know what I'm saying?
And 100%.
When I do need it, I'm like, dang, I knew I should have packed it, you know. But I just tell everybody, do their due diligence. Whatever you think that you need to put in your pack, put it in there. If it's toilet paper, I don't care. Put it in your pack. You know, you might need it. You might need that little piece of rope that you think that you, I probably won't need that. That piece of paracord or that.
Yeah, the bungee, yeah.
Yeah, the like anything. Just put it in your pack. It's better to have it than to not have it. So, but yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
That presents a challenge because it adds weight. So that's the difficult part. And that's why I say the hunting, because, you know, carrying all that stuff. So that was another reason why I felt like I wouldn't be successful, which I was okay with, because I had to leave my blind up. So you usually roost, you find out where they are, then you set up your blind. But I'm not going out in the night. And so I'm not setting up in the night. I can't get there early enough to set up. You might disturb them and make them move. So, you know, I just had to hope for the best. You know, if I go out with people, then I think it would be, you know, better. And that's going to be the goal for next year.
Yeah, that's awesome. I meant to ask you, we were talking about, you know, your firearms background. Is there like a specific, because I know a lot of people in this outdoor industry, they're very brand loyal. You know, they prefer one bow company over another, or one rifle company over another company. Like, is there like any specific like brands that you like over other brands, or are you pretty much an open book and like them all?
Yeah, I can't say I have a favorite brand. I know when we're talking pistols, there's the only one I've shot them and they're okay, but the one that's the least, the one I would not buy or, you know, shoot often, Glocks are just not my favorite. I can't stand a Glock. I don't like them at all. I mean,
I thought we were going to be friends, but we're no.
Let me explain why. I mean, Glocks overall, I mean, I've shot them. They're great guns to shoot. The problem, I think, is for somebody who is has smaller hands, mm-hmm. is the boxiness of it doesn't fit. You know, it doesn't fit quite like an HK or like, you know, Smith & Wesson or Smith Springfield. It's just a different, it's just so boxy. Mm. And that's my only gripe with it. Seriously, my only gripe is the grip. So that's the reason why. I mean, some of the other companies, you know, you can have, you know, different size grips. You can exchange, you know, change interchangeable or change them out. Some you have ambi, you know, grips and, you know, whatever. But that's my only gripe with Glocks, is I don't like their grip. Mm-hmm. So yes, I like them. Yeah, but the grip is the problem. So does that make you feel better?
It does. I always get people. I always mess with people because they're like, everybody knows that knows me, like with the gun side of me. Like I love my Glocks. Like I love them. I've tried Sig. Nothing wrong with them. Nothing wrong with Ruger. I just prefer Glock simply because they feel good in my hand. And I grew up shooting them. My dad, you know, he bought, I don't remember how old I was. I was probably about 12 or 13. And my dad's left-handed. So he brought this Glock home. And he got from a guy at work or whatever to try out. I'm not a junior, but that's what he called me. He's like, Junior, come out here and shoot this. I was like, all right. You know, so he put my ear pro on, make sure I have my glasses and stuff. And he's, you know, showing me how to hold it. And I just started shooting it. And I'm shooting at a target, like a box or something. And he's showing me how to rack it, you know, how to work everything, the magazine, how it worked and everything. And as I got older, like, I'd go out there and shoot with him a lot. And then once I turned 21, I got my concealed license. And as soon as I walked in, the guy was like, hey, you know, what are you looking for? I said, I want a Glock 17. And I don't care how much it costs, because I had been saving my money up for whatever. That guy was like, man, there's a lot of different. And I said, no, I want a Glock 17. So the guy said, what are you doing with it? I said, I'm going to conceal carry it. He says, whoa, 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 whoa. And I was probably 215, 220 at the time. I was kind of smaller than I was now. So the guy's like, hold on, you're going to conceal carry a Glock 17? He's like, hold on. He said, how about this Glock 19?
19.
And I was like, yep. I was like, oh, I've never seen a 19 because all my dad shot was a 17, you know? So I seen this 19. I was like, oh. So I held it in my hand. I was like, this feels fantastic. He said, man, he said, go back out. He said, we've got a range out back. You can, you know, rent this gun or whatever. He said, but if you're going to buy it, he said, just go shoot that 19 that's back there. So I'm out there shooting. I said, dude, this feels fantastic. So I called my dad. I said, Dad, there's another Glock, because I didn't know much about them at the time besides the Glock 17.
Uh-huh.
No. So I called Dad. I said, Dad, there's another Glock that you probably need. Well, my dad had bigger hands than me. I said, you probably wouldn't, you know, it probably wouldn't feel good to you, but this 19 feels fantastic. He said, well, if it feels good, he said, get it, you know. And that was my first gun purchase, was a Glock 7 or a Glock 19. I still own that to this day. And I've got the Gen 3s and the Gen 4s, the Gen 5s, and the 48s, the 43s, you know, I just love the way they feel. But, you know, Glock gets a bad rap because, you know, the fanboys, you know, if you don't shoot Glock, you don't know what you're, you know, but everybody's got their reasons. And I can see, you know, people with smaller hands, the boxiness of them, and just the ergonomics. And I mean, yeah. So I just like to give people crap about that sometimes because, you know, I love my Glocks, but everybody's got their own thing. I get it.
So my thing is my favorite firearm is one that fits best in my hand and then I shoot the best. So right. I'm not brand specific. I usually, if I'm going to purchase another firearm, I go and rent it first because I want to feel it. I want to see how the action, I want to see how the trigger feels for me. There's a whole process to it that I do in order to determine if that's something that I want to invest in.
So I had one of my friends, he used to shoot skeet competition
nice, okay,
quite a bit. And I haven't talked to him probably a couple of years now. He just stays so busy. He lives in Texas now, but he's shoot, and I used to go with him a lot. And he got to buying these, you know, big expensive Brownings and, you know, $3,000-$4,000. You know, that's like the low end that I've seen in some of these, you know, competition shotguns. He'd been winning, you know, pretty good. We get to Alabama and this guy shows up and he's got a single shot, like H&R or something, like an older model single shot. he gets teamed up with him. And he kind of looked at me. He's like, dude, I'm about to blow this kid out of the water. This kid, I think he might have been like 18 or 19 years old. My buddy was probably 25 at the time. Was wiping the floor with these old men and these $3,000-$4,000 shotguns. And they were just sitting there like amazed that he could shoot this good. So we had like a little break, like a little lunch break in between matches. And I went over there and asked him, I was like, sir, I said, how do you shoot this so good? He said, I bought this when I was like 18 years old. He said, I didn't have a lot of money growing up. And this was my gun, and I'm so used to it. He said, I've shot rabbits, squirrels, all kind of stuff. He said, I'm just so comfortable with the shotgun that I really can't afford anything else. And he said, I love shooting skeet. And that man ended up, I think, getting either second or third in the competition. And the only reason that he lost the last match is because he didn't close the action all the way one time when he shot, and it clicked on him. And I was like, oh man, because he could have won the whole thing. And everybody's just like, man, I've got this $4,000 Browning and this and this. I said, man, it ain't about that. I said, it's about the shooter. I said, you know, I grew up in a baseball background. I said, a $500 bat does not fix a $2 swing, you know. And I said, it's all about getting comfortable with your gear, what feels comfortable to you. Just because so-and-so's over here shooting a Benelli doesn't mean that you've got to go shoot one. Find what works for you, shoot it, get comfortable with it. So, sorry, I got to rambling there a little bit. But
no, not at all. And I don't know if you know this, but the NSSA and NSCA both are home in the national headquarters in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. That's where the National Shooting Sports Complex is.
Yeah. So my buddy got me to try out like some of those Briley chokes.
Okay.
And they're made in Texas, and they're kind of a sponsor of the podcast. They send me some stuff over, and I absolutely love their chokes. They've got 1,000 of them that you can buy. And you can actually go in their facility in Texas, say, hey, I've got this shotgun. Here's the load I have. Make me a choke for it. And they will go back there. The gunsmith will make you one. And I want to get down there and kind of see their facility. But if I told my wife, if I moved anywhere out of the state of Kentucky, I'm going to Texas, period.
Nice.
Yeah, I love Texas. It's just, I don't know. I love it. So, but yeah, we've been on here for a little over an hour. I got a couple more questions for you, and I'll let you get off here. So, your next hunting goal, what species are you going to want to target next? And is there a certain location you want to go? And
so, what's next for you? I'm still researching it now, but I think. I went on to the DEC website because that's where you can find all the seasons. And I'm almost positive the next thing I'm going to do is probably the deer hunting in the fall. We kind of in New York, we kind of like stop until the fall. So the fall is going to be the next season. It's probably going to be deer hunting. And I'm going to try to see if I can muster up some friends to take me. Otherwise, it'll be the fall turkey season. And my goal is really just to enjoy the experience because, of course, hunting in the spring is different than hunting in the fall. So understanding what I need to do to be prepared for that, I've been starting my research already, trying to get out there and learn more hunting things. The DEC has a great summer program, and they have multiple events throughout the year and that's why I love, you know, going to them. And looking at their events to see, sometimes they do fishing events. They, you know, fishing season's upon us. So they have like fishing derbies. They have, you know, a couple of different things. So just trying to learn more about hunting so that next year I'll be more prepared than this year. And so my goal really right now is just to learn as much as I can, try to meet up with people who have experience, who are willing to take out the, you know, to take me out and show me the ropes. And I would love to apprentice and, you know, let's you know, build dress a deer. I've never done it. So I know the principle behind it. Like I said, it's a medical background, but it'd be nice to see it in practice. So that's my goal, trying to find people that are prepared and willing to take me out for the fall.
Yeah. That's
if awesome. I catch a deer, that'd be great. I'll have meat till it's gone.
Oh man, deer meat is, have you ever had it before? Deer meat?
Okay. I have not. I've been vegan for 16 years.
Oh man.
Last year, I was a vegan hunter and I got made fun of. But last year I decided that I was going to be pescatarian. So I had not had meat in well over 16 years. But I told myself this year, anything that I take, I will try. So if I do get a deer, I will try venison.
It's going to change your life. It will absolutely change your life. It's some of the best tasting meat. And there's a lot of good meat out there. Elk meat. I mean, there's a lot of good meat out there. Dove, it's really good, but deer meat, man, it's fantastic. So
really nice. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I hope you get one for sure.
Thank you.
But one more question and I will get you out of here. So being a African-American woman in the outdoors and with a background in firearms, you know, Boy Scouts and everything like that, like what advice would you give a young lady who is wanting to get into the outdoors, but they're kind of on the fence about it because maybe the flack they might get or being made fun of? What advice would you give her?
That's a very good question. But it is. And thank you. If I had to say anything, you know, regarding outdoors, firearms, anything, my personal thought would be to find a female mentor, if you could, or someone that you're close to. I think there's something about listening to a way a woman can explain something to someone who's maybe even nervous about it. There's certain things that are different. So like you talk about concealed carry, there's things that women have to consider, men don't have to consider. So having a female person mentor you and help, you know, if you have a question on something, can I do this? Do those thigh holsters really work? Like, I mean, you know, are they practical? Is the bra holster really practical? You know, and you know, your shape, what kind of jeans, pants, you know, your different environments. So having someone who has a female perspective on it can really help a young lady have full knowledge, you know, because ultimately that's how you're going to really grow. I mean, it's great. Of course, listen to everybody, take everybody's information in, do your research. Know what you're talking about. Take your safety classes. Don't just take one hunting class. Say, I'm a hunter. Go and do it again. Maybe if you didn't feel comfortable with something, you know, do it again. You know, sometimes, you know, the way things are presented by men, you're kind of wondering, hey, if I borrow your shotgun, are you going to expect something in return? So having a female or, you know, a woman mentor is so important. And that's why I'm happy. And I hope that we continue to grow and get out there, because that's really what I think a young lady needs. They need a female perspective because our views are different. Like, would you ever think if a buddy said, hey, you want to shoot my Glock? That you would be like, oh, what do you want me to do? Kiss you later? You want to go on a date? You might not think that, but we know that those kind of things happen. And that's why being with a female mentor, that's my thing. Have your knowledge, acquire your knowledge, however you need to acquire it. But having a mentor, a female mentor, would make a world of difference and would cut down on some of the things that are more important for you to know.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. That's a fantastic answer. Yeah. Cause like you said, you know, there's some things that y'all have to worry about that we don't have to worry about, you know, so.
And physiologically, autonomically, there's a lot of things, like even position. How do you carry? What position do you carry in? It's not going to be this. Our hips are different. Our breasts are bigger. You know, there's a lot of things to consider. You know, our clothing is different. So
right.
I just put my gun belt. Well, you're wearing spandex. Right? Where's your gun belt? You can't just put it inside your waistband. So you're going for a jog. What's the best holster to wear? You know, if you want to conceal carry or even in hunting, you know, you're going out there. What equipment should you have with you? You know, should you carry that can of mace? Do you have a whistle? I mean, these are all things that we as women need to consider because we have multiple, I'm not going to say multiple threats, but I'm going to say multiple opportunities that we need to be, you know, prepared for and aware of. And there's just some things that men just don't have, you know? So that's why I think that that's going to be my answer.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. And thank you for that, because I feel like somebody out there is going to see this podcast or listen to this podcast, and you know, they might be on the fence about it, and they're going to hear that, but like, okay, let's do this. So thank you for that. But
and the approach too, if I can just say one thing also, the approach is different. So like one of the things is my daughter was getting into pistols, and I would not have done it this way, but another guy who's a good friend of mine, shoot this right here. And it was something way more powerful than she needed at the time. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that powerful. But for a little kid, it was not what I would have introduced her. So just understanding a woman's perspective, a woman's body, a woman, you know, sometimes we have these things and just catering to that. So, you know, that's what my answer would be.
Yeah. Don't give up. A woman, a first-time shooter, a 500 Smith & Wesson, and expect her to shoot it fine, you know. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. But, yeah, that's a great answer for sure. But, yeah, just want to thank you once again for, you know, coming on the podcast and giving your perspective and your background. Love what you're doing. Keep doing it. If I can ever be of assistance to you or if you have any questions for me, I'll try to answer the best I can. I'm not perfect. I don't know everything, but I will try to get you the best answer that I can. But I'm going to get you in touch with Sharenda for sure. I think y'all would click and y'all would have a ball together. Like I said, I think she's in Missouri. not positive, but I'm almost positive she is. So, Any last thoughts or anything for the viewers?
Well, for you, Courtney, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate what you're doing. It's so great to see representation. That's been my main thing, representation. And I love what you're doing. And my last thoughts is, if you haven't done it, if you want to try it and do it, just get out there, you know. Acquire the knowledge first. Don't go out there ignorantly, but acquiring the knowledge will make your experience more positive. So I hope to see everybody out there, and I hope we, you know, grow as a community. I feel like underrepresented is the hunters of color, the outdoors women and men of color, and the shooting sports of color. So get out there, and I look forward to seeing us in growing our community and supporting our community. So thank you so much, Courtney, for everything. This has been very fun. I've had an amazing time tonight. Thank you.
I'm glad. I know you said you were nervous at the beginning. I said, man, it's real laid back. Anything you don't want to answer, you know. So I think the viewers are going to have something with this one. It's been fun. Thank you so much for the kind words. You know, I'm just trying to do my part to get us more out there and just showcase what we do and give as much knowledge as I can. Thank you. This podcast will be out Apple Podcasts, Spotify, my YouTube channel, probably in a couple weeks. I had to edit it and everything like that. So make sure y'all give it a like. Make sure y'all subscribe to my channel and everything like that. And if you have any questions for me or Miss Ebony, you know, you can hit us up. We're both on Instagram. You know, she's new into this game, so I know she's going to probably get a lot of people trying to tell her this and trying to tell her that. And like she said, she's an open book. She's going to take it, and she's going to, you know, try to make it work for her and figure this thing out. And I really hope you get a deer this time, because I'm telling you, that deer meat will change your life. But with that being said, Miss Ebony Brown, ladies and gentlemen, big game, small game, all game. We do this too. Thank you.
Get up before the rooster, put on my camo, load up my bow and my rifle and stock the ammo. I'm a bullet with the bullet, but I'm lethal with the arrow. Always down for the hunt, dub turkey and big bucks. Hit the woods and get fitted up, mossy oak all across my fit. Don't be surprised, we do this too.
I get up before the sun with my 30 at 6. Yeah. All body on, I ain't worried about the kick. Yeah, we do.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.